Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Dad deserves something really nice for Father's Day, but let's face it, we usually don't do it. Big gifts are for Mother's Day. Picking something up on the way is for Father's Day. Well, let's make Father's Day something this year with the Bartesian Cocktail Maker. It whips up over 60 premium cocktails on demand, each ready at the push of a button. And right now, you get $50 off the Bartesian Cocktail Maker when you buy one pack of Dad's favorite cocktail capsules. Dad will publicly love that you saved $50 on the countertop machine that crafts premium cocktails on demand. And he'll secretly love that you splurged on him for Father's Day with the gift of a Bartesian. Because the only thing that lets Dad know he's the world's number one dad better than a world's number one dad coffee mug is an artisan cocktail in his hand. Make Dad's Father's Day and Father's Day cocktails with all natural juices and bitters without making any mess at all. Visit bartesian.com/father to get $50 off the best premium cocktail maker for Dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Oh, hello, you wonderful, beautiful listeners. This is Let's Talk About Myths, baby! And I am Liv, the host, the producer, the writer, the goddamn everything of this podcast. And I, well, goddammit, I am so fucking excited to announce that you all can officially pre-order my upcoming book of mythology. Greek Mythology, the Gods, Goddesses, and Heroes Handbook is scheduled to come out this coming March, and I am truly exploding with excitement. As you can see on the cover, if you head to my Instagram or my website, it's fucking beautiful. And the interior illustrations? God damn it, they are even better. It's truly some of the most incredible pieces of art that I've seen in a long time. I'm losing my mind. So head over to mythsbaby.com/book to find places to pre-order. On that page, you can find links to Simon & Schuster's pages for the book in the US, Canada, the UK, and Australia. But my international listeners, just search for my name or the book's name on the website of your favorite local bookstore and you should be able to order it. Or you should be able to find one of the links on those aforementioned pages that will ship to wherever you live. As far as I know, it's shipping basically everywhere. It just takes a bit of digging when you're outside of North America. UK and Australia listeners, the website only lists an ebook. That's not true. You just have to get a print book shipped to you. I believe the US site will do that, or again, just check your local store's websites. It's available where most English books are sold. As more pre-order locations become available too, I will share them with you guys. This is just what I know so far. I've written a book! There's a book being published by an imprint of Simon & Schuster that will have my name on it. Seriously, goddamn, what is happening in this world? Anyway, sorry, enough vague bragging. Please consider pre-ordering if you can. Well, today's the day. It's the day where I finally make up for the month of June when I was writing the aforementioned book while still doing my full-time job and could barely keep my head above water. And so I had to miss out on Pride Month with all you magnificent people. I told you I'd make up for it with a Pride episode, and here I am. It's only August. I've already told most of the well-known stories of representation in Greek mythology, the ones that have actual, well, stories attached to them. If you know of any that I haven't covered that have stories, please always send them my way, as I'll need something for next year. Instead, though, for today, I thought I would recount all of them, at least all that I can find. And in covering all of these stories, we get a much better understanding of just how accepted it was in ancient Greece to be gay, to be queer, bisexual, transgender, all of it. Plus, I talked to Mary Phillips of Myths and Tits, one of my favorite artists working in the realm of mythology, specifically in LGBTQIA representation. We talked about representation in all the different characters of mythology and feminism and badass women, and oh my god, it was such a fun conversation. This is episode 87. The gods were all a little gay. LGBTQIA representation in mythology. The ancient Greeks used mythology to understand the natural world around them. This applies to the flowers that grew around them, the waves in the sea, the winds blowing through their towns, and the sexual and gender identities of their people. As we sane people well know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, non-binary, queer, intersex, and asexual people, and any that I might not have referenced right there, have existed forever and will continue to exist forever. A spectrum of sexual preferences and gender identities is as natural as, just as the Greeks knew even then, the flowers that grow around us, the waves in the sea, and the winds blowing through our towns. So, like everything else, the ancient Greeks developed stories within their mythologies to understand people who weren't necessarily in the majority, who weren't cisgendered straight. Now, a quick note. Much like, well, almost every other story I tell you all each week, the stories contained here tend to be male-centric. There are very few, if any, stories of explicit lesbian relationships. It's completely the opposite of the examples of gay relationships, where we have countless examples of passionate love between men, stories that are compassionate and endearing and very real. With women, it's less explicit. I can only assume it's the same issues as with all these stories, it wasn't women telling them. If it were, I imagine we'd have just as many stories of relationships between women. Instead, we have a few mysteries, and I'll cover them too. One day I will really dive into Sappho, but that's going to take a lot of research, so it's on the list of episodes that will come when this is my job. It all begins with a young man named Ganymede. Well, chronologically, who knows, because it's Greek mythology, but the story of his encounter with a god does appear in the Iliad, though the sexual nature of it is less explicit there. But Ganymede is Zeus's foray into same-sex relationships, and therefore one of the most important and famous. Zeus saw Ganymede, a young prince of Troy, long before the war, and believed him to be one of the most beautiful young men he'd ever seen. Of course, as Zeus does, when he sees something he wants, man or woman, he takes them. Zeus kidnapped Ganymede and brought him to Olympus, where, one can assume, Zeus raped him. There, he installed Ganymede as his personal cupbearer, an incredibly high honor, and one that notably has not equaled in any of the stories about Zeus's assault of women. That doesn't lessen how horrific it is for Ganymede. It's just an example of how the patriarchy persists, even in horror stories like these. Ganymede was made this cupbearer of Zeus, and Zeus was so grateful to his family back in Troy for, you know, giving up their son without a major fight, I guess. Not that they could have stopped him anyway. That he gave to the Trojans, Tros, who was their king at the time and father to Ganymede, two divine horses. These were fancy horses, important and immortal horses. So it begins, if horribly, the gay relationships of the Greek gods. Apollo, of course, loved many, many men, along with many, many women. A bi icon he was. Hyacinthus is the most famous love of Apollo's, and theirs appears to be a real and passionate love. Quite the opposite of Zeus's taking of Ganymede. Still, it ended in tragedy, as most love affairs with gods do. And Hyacinthus wasn't only loved by Apollo. The crux of the story is that he was loved by many men. I've told the story that he was loved by Apollo and the west wind Zephyrus, but other versions have a man named Thamyris also in love with Hyacinthus. There's an episode for that, so if you're thinking to yourself, is that all Liv is going to tell us? That's what I'm doing today. But listen to the mini-myth, Apollo and Hyacinthus, a Frisbee tragedy, for the whole story. Apollo also loved a man named Cyparissus, though it too ended in tragedy, again, as most relationships with the gods do. There's an episode for him too. It's my Vancouver Fan Expo Live episode. Admetus was a famous man who Apollo loved, though his fame comes more from his wife, Alcestis. Their story is for another day. There's a very famous play by that name. Later stories have other male loves of Apollo that are less well known, more mentions than anything else. Often these come from a desire of Apollo's to give the men prophetic powers. Wherever these stories appear, though, they're only further examples of how normal and natural it was believed to be that a man, one of the most important Greek gods, loved other men alongside women. Apollo was a real slut, that's very clear, but he was an equal opportunity bisexual one. And then there's Dionysus. Oh, Dionysus. There are still so many stories to tell about that brilliant, beloved god of wine and revelry. But he, too, loved both men and women. Though I personally believe he was probably more pansexual. We don't necessarily have explicit examples of that, but it just seems more his truth. Dionysus was pretty fluid with his own gender, and most of all enjoyed making sure he and all his devoted followers were just having a great time. Dionysus loved a man named Ampelus, but just as in the stories of Apollo, their love ended in tragedy. Ampelus did become the personification of grapevines, though, so that's a plus for him. And Prosimnus. Ooh, Prosimnus. He loved Dionysus and, well, I won't give it all away, but there's definitely a dildo and a death involved. You can listen to that in the mini-myth, The Olympians Put the B in LGBTQ+, a pride compendium, for more on that story and the one of Ampelus. Hermes, too, loved a number of men, but there isn't much in the way of stories attached to such loves. But some say that Hermes and the hero Perseus were lovers, others that Hermes loved a king of Boeotia named Amphion, and then there's the story of Crocus, a man loved by Hermes whose story is essentially the very same as the story of Apollo and Hyacinthus. Poor Crocus was also killed by a flying discus and transformed into a flower. This isn't a coincidence, but instead it's an alternative story to the one of Apollo and his love of Hyacinthus. As for our goddesses, that's where the mystery, the intrigue, begins. Artemis. Oh, Artemis. Now, personally, I believe Artemis was a lesbian. There's no proof of this, nor proof otherwise, but I believe it. Or I've heard some argue that she was asexual, which is certainly possible, though from my perspective, there's more evidence that she was gay than asexual. For instance, Callisto. Callisto's story is tragic, and told in an episode alongside the story of Canis, who I'll mention later. Episode 52, Jupiter and Neptune Ruin Everything, The Stories of Canis and Callisto. Artemis and Callisto are, I think, an example of a relationship between the goddess and a woman. Artemis also positioned herself to be constantly surrounded by beautiful nymphs, never had want of men in her life, and often punished men she encountered. That's the evidence I have. While Artemis's side of the potential relationship is not explicit, Callisto's love for Artemis is explicit. In some versions of the story, Zeus even transforms himself into Artemis in order to put Callisto in a position where he can rape her. It's horrifying, but is an example of a woman loving another woman. In doing so, it exemplifies what I've already said. The men, they didn't like relationships between two women. They barely told us about them at all. If any of the gods were asexual, I believe it could be Athena. I can't say I've read everything about her, but I've never come across a relationship. There may have been a little something between her and the girl Pallas, whose name she took, but that story's brief. Athena was much more independent, concerned with doing her own thing, helping heroes, punishing women. Relationships weren't her jam. There are heroes, too, who loved men and women. Heracles had many young men considered to be his lovers. I told the story of Heracles and Hylas in my more recent Pride episode. Their names are in the title. But Heracles also loved Abderos, a man who was tragically eaten by man-eating Thracian horses during one of Heracles' labors. Heracles may also have loved Aeolus, who acted as his squire, but was also his nephew, so, I mean, that's not great. But all of these stories of gods and heroes who loved other men pale in comparison to everyone's favorite horrible tragedy. The relationship of Achilles and Patroclus. Oh, Patroclus. While many have tried, it's hard to deny that Achilles and his friend Patroclus were very much in love. The various translations of Homer attempt to deny it, particularly the translation of the Iliad that I'm reading to you all every Friday, but I think we all know the truth, or the truth we want to believe, at least. I don't read ancient Greek, something I would like to remedy as soon as possible, so I don't know the original Greek words, but from what I've read, Patroclus sure is referred to as some form of Achilles' beloved an awful lot. And then, of course, we have Madeline Miller's stunning, unbelievably incredible novel, The Song of Achilles. It's a novel, sure, a fictionalization, but man, it's just too convincing. Between that and everything else about the Iliad and Achilles and Patroclus' relationship, Achilles' reaction to the death of Patroclus, the way they were devoted to each other, oh, they were in love. If one takes that opinion on their relationship, theirs is one of the most iconic same-sex relationships in ancient Greek mythology and literature as a whole. Now let's all just go reread the Song of Achilles. While it's important and powerful that there are so many gay and bisexual relationships in Greek mythology, what fascinates me even more is how they understood trans and intersex people. Now more than ever, it's important to emphasize the history of trans people, that they've always been with us in the world, and that even those ancient, deeply rooted patriarchies were able to understand them and accept them in their own way. There are a number of stories of trans and intersex characters in Greek mythology, and they were usually understood to have been helped by the gods in some way to become the gender they identified with. The gods would typically help a person change their gender or do it as a punishment. Iphis and Ianthe is one of these stories, and probably the most beautiful. I've told the story in detail in the mini-myth When a Girl Loves a Girl, Ovid's Iphis and Ianthe. Iphis is born a girl, but her mother disguises her as a boy from the beginning. Iphis's father would only accept a boy, an heir, and Iphis's mother saved him by disguising him as a boy. As a teenager, Iphis's father arranges for him to marry Ianthe, a local girl. They'd grown up together and were already quite in love. Of course, Iphis was worried for the wedding night, but he prayed to the goddess Isis, or some say Hera if we're using explicitly Greek names, to be transformed into the boy he always felt he was. That wish was granted. The story can be told in two ways. Either Iphis is indeed a girl and has been hidden away as a boy due to the goddamn patriarchy. This makes the transformation a bit sadder. It helps them be together, sure, but you're left feeling a little bummed that two nice girls couldn't be together as, well, two nice girls. But if Iphis is viewed more as a trans boy who's been passing all that time and simply wants his body to match his gender identity, then Isis is a goddamn hero and gives Iphis what so many trans people have trouble accessing even today. Either way, the story, written down by Ovid in Roman times, is an overt acceptance of both same-sex love and transgender people. And of course, it's not the only one. The story of Canis is another story of a person's gender being changed, but this one stems from a far more troubling encounter. In the case of Canis, she is born a woman and is desired by all the men around her, but we're told herself is disinterested. She's spotted, though, one day by the god Neptune, Poseidon, since this story is told by Ovid, and he rapes her before offering her whatever she wants in compensation for the trauma he's just inflicted on her. It's super fucking weird. This one is super dark, frankly. She chooses to become a man, so this will never happen again, and he grants the wish. Canis with an I is now Canis with a U, and he becomes an invulnerable warrior, known all around for his incredible skill in battle. This story is a bit harder to interpret, but it addresses so many real and important issues. The trauma around rape, the horror of being a woman in a world where men get to do whatever the fuck they want to women's bodies, and of course, transgender issues. Though in this case, it's harder to determine the origins of that and whether or not it results directly from the trauma, something which is obviously problematic today and just straight up horrifying, or whether it was something Canis felt the entire time and was simply granted after that trauma. How to transition out of that one? Anyway, there are also a number of examples of intersex people in mythology. Hermaphroditus is the first, the god of intersex people, and the child of Hermes and Aphrodite, hence the name Hermaphroditus. Hermaphroditus was born with both male and female parts, though what those parts are can vary depending upon what you're reading or what art you're viewing. What doesn't vary is that they are intersex, and so the ancient Greeks actually had a god for intersex people. According to Ovid, in a story I told in the aforementioned LGBTQ+ compendium episode, a nymph named Salmacis is sometimes involved with making Hermaphroditus intersex. She tried to rape Hermaphroditus and as punishment was made one with the god, which is kind of weird and darker than I'd like. Either way, the ancient Greeks understood intersex people to be so normal that they had a god devoted to them. I'll be honest with you all. Like I said earlier, I'm running out of LGBTQIA stories to tell during the month of June. So in this episode, I just wanted to relay the list itself because I think that is important as a whole, the sheer volume. It's not comprehensive. There are other characters who are gay or bi or trans or intersex, but they are concepts more than stories. The point, though, is that if the ancient Greeks, a people who lived thousands of years ago, can understand and accept people who weren't cisgendered and straight, then we of 2020 absolutely can. None of this boomer bullshit about all these gender identities being new. They're not new, they're just getting louder about being treated as real people to be accepted for what they are. So the next time someone comes at you with some of that shit, tell them about Iphis and Ianthe or Aphroditus or all the gods who loved a lot of men. The stories are countless and they're eternal. They've been around forever and they're not going anywhere.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us, to crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Well, it's time. Myths and Tits has been one of my favorite artists for a while now. I learned about Mari when she sent me some beautiful pieces way back, and I now have quite a few of them framed in my apartment. Her Medusa is a particular favorite, but then it's Medusa. So here is my conversation with her. It was so much fun, though, finally speaking with this person I've been Instagram friends with for so long, and such a thrill speaking with someone who loves mythology like I do.
So, hiya, my name is Mari Phillips and I'm from Cardiff. I am an illustrator. I'm also known as Myths and Tits. And I like to illustrate all your favourite gods and goddesses, and with the inclusion of LGBTQIA community and female sexuality.
So you did tell me earlier, before we were recording, that you got started partially because of my podcast, which is the coolest thing I've ever heard. But other than that, so what got you interested in working with mythology and the artwork that you're doing now?
Yeah, when I graduated university, I was really interested in sex education. So I just wanted to comment on social issues, always wanted to do something to do with feminism and LGBT community and like giving those people a voice. And when after I listened to the podcast, I was just like, well, these amazing characters, we haven't actually listened to these stories in such great depth and actually given these characters a personality. And I just couldn't wait to like draw them and just give them a personality, give them a bit of sass, show them in their bedrooms and, you know, their sexual kinks and all that. I just couldn't wait to do it. I was just so excited.
That's so much fun. And that's what makes them so cool, is that they are like, they have so much personality, your interpretations of the gods and things. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, I do try and make people laugh as much as possible. It probably gets too much sometimes, but I just love it.
I mean, hey, it's working. I really want that Dionysus one you have, just like surrounded by the wine. That's gonna be my next purchase.
That's a favorite at the moment. But yeah, that was one of my favorite ones. I think it was because I drew him with a mullet. And because I've got a mullet and all my friends have got a mullet. And I was like, right, I've got to do one dedicated to the mullet. And it was when Tiger King had come out as well. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like, what a coincidence. And I think that's why people were just so attracted to it. And I did animal print in the background as well. So
that certainly helps. That's so much fun. So who are your favorite queer characters in Greek mythology to draw, and for their personalities or whatever, and why? Like, tell me about that.
So one of my queer favorites is Artemis. I just love how she's so mysterious. Like, everyone always thinks like, oh, she's a virgin, you know, she has no sexual orientation. But I like to go in deeper within like Greek mythology and actually think about her a bit more. Like, she has all these female followers and, you know, she likes to be by herself. And just, I think I really want to delve in deep with like female sexuality and figure out why they are perceived as being virgins, because I highly doubt that they're virgins, to be honest. Or else if they are, then it's probably their choice. You know, I like to go deep in within asexuality. Are they a lesbian? Are they queer? I just think that Artemis is so intriguing to me.
Yeah, I've always been really interested in her too, and sort of what is there. I recently, some people were talking on Twitter about whether she is, you know, maybe asexual or sort of a similar identification. But I often wonder about her. I think that, I often wonder if because they called them virgins, whether that actually meant that they were lesbians, and in the ancient Greek world, lesbian sex wouldn't be understood the same way, and so they would consider them virgins, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I found out within some of my research that obviously gay sex was really accepted, and male romantic love was considered the highest form of love and adoration. And I just wonder sometimes, like, why didn't they bring it up? I know that women were thought of as like a lesser class than men back in those days, but if they had female gods, then surely they would be represented amongst the women in their own lives. But I think just, they just didn't really want to, they weren't interested enough in female sexuality, were they, really? But it was Dionysus. They're the person who like brought it out of them, you know? And that's why I really enjoyed drawing Dionysus as well, because he definitely does it for the girls and the gays. And that is it.
He does.
Like, he does.
Yeah.
I love it.
He's amazing for that. I mean, honestly, yeah. He's just like, I mean, without being the god of sexuality, he's the god of sexuality.
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, a huge part of my show, without necessarily, like, you know, diving into any kind of accepted academic research on the subject, but is talking about so much of what we do and don't know because of the way that women were treated. Like, I think probably if you were able to actually go back there, you would find representations of lesbianism more openly, and you would meet women who were obviously lesbians in some way or another, you know. It would be hard for them to live like that just because they weren't citizens or like considered people without men involved. So that's always a fun aspect of it, but yeah, I mean, because the thing is, what we have, you know, the stories that we have were for the most part told by men. Every once in a while I get an angry person on the internet who wants to yell at me about how women obviously were like, you know, as a mother figure would have told stories as well. And I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
But they didn't write them down. So it's not the same. Like, you're not able to say that everything we have in Greek mythology is based around women because, oh, women probably told stories. It's like, yeah, they probably did, but women weren't allowed to be writers or playwrights or anything. So we don't have their stories.
Yeah, exactly. They've been given the opportunity to write those stories down. But I just keep on thinking, like, how amazing would those stories be? They would be so full of some sass. I would love to hear some of those.
Well, yeah, you think about the stories we do have from ancient Greece and how much personality and insanity and just, you know, the drama they like to have in their stories. Like, yeah, imagine if women were allowed to have the same level of personality and the same level of storytelling as the men were. Like, oh, what a world we'd have.
I know.
I think about that a lot, just in terms of what we don't have, even from the men too, just what's been lost because nobody copied it down or it got burned up, or, you know, the number of things that we don't have from ancient Greece.
Yeah, like, I want to know a bit more about Hermaphroditus's life. Like, I know about their, you know, the way they were conceived, and I would just love to hear about, you know, how they went through life and if they were accepted or not accepted, because I think they probably would be accepted if the story was so, you know, so famous and so popular. And I think it would really help, like, this new generation to figure out who they are and, like, to actually be inspired just to, you know, that, you know, they have that story from the past to keep on living, to hold themselves and to be proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many stories like that. I mean, Hermaphroditus is such a good example. And then the number of trans stories we have proves that the ancient Greeks absolutely understood that trans people were real and that they deserved to be understood and recognized. And they found ways of incorporating that into their own world. And that's something that, number one, should be taken today. Like, you know, if everyone's going to base their lives around everything the ancient Greeks did back then, like, why are we not using that as obvious proof that they understood trans people? So why the hell aren't they, you know, understood today?
Yeah, exactly. And in a way, you know, Greek mythology is thought of as being so grand, and like, when you go to an art gallery now and you see all these sculptures and you think, wow, these are amazing, and these are the gods that everybody looked towards to, you know, to be inspired by, and they've inspired so many, like, pieces of literature, art, everything, and you just think, why can't we look back at that and think, that's how I want to live my life, and that's how, you know, I'm so inspired by this, and it's just going to carry on from there.
Absolutely. And I mean, there are so many problematic things that people attribute to Greek, like ancient Greece, and that's why those are okay. Like, I mean, so many aspects of the horrifying resurgence of white supremacy right now are based around this, like, Western civilization bullshit. So it's like, well, if you can pull Western civilization as your, you know, reason for the ancient Greeks being the top of everything, like, why not also notice that, hey, they had many trans stories.
Yes,
they
exactly.
clearly recognize them as people. Like, yeah, so do you have any, I'm trying to think of if I know if you've worked on any particular trans characters from mythology in your art or anything, or do you have anything sort of planned there?
So I really love the story of Iphis and Nyanthe, but I've always found it quite, it's quite a complex story. And before I even illustrate something, I kind of like to get to the ends of it. And I'm afraid of like offending people sometimes. I'm just always too cautious, because obviously you should be cautious and you should think about it really hard. And I always think whether or not Iphis is a trans character or maybe they're a non-binary character. And yeah, but I think it is open to interpretation. And just, I think if we open up that conversation amongst people, and I've been thinking of illustrating her and bringing up a conversation amongst my followers. So people who may identify as non-binary or trans can maybe suss out who they are, you know? But it's Iphis and Nyanthe. I do really love that story, and how I always think about whether or not Nyanthe was just supporting them throughout the whole time. And I always think they were like childhood sweethearts, but Iphis was holding this secret inside themselves. And after the transition, like, whether or not Nyanthe was like, yeah, you're great, you are who you've always wanted to be, you know, and I stick by you with that. And maybe it was a problem with the parents rather than Nyanthe.
Yeah, I would interpret it that way too. And it is so complex, because it was also the ancient way of understanding it, you know it's,
yeah,
it's multiple stories in one.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always different versions of different stories. But I think if we just, you know, talk about them more and bring them up into conversation, then it just sparks more conversation rather than decision making and judgment straight away. So, I love that story.
Absolutely. No, I actually didn't know that story before I found it for the podcast. And it was such a thrill discovering that one, which is kind of how I feel about any sort of one in Ovid that I didn't know about beforehand, because he's just so beautiful with everything that it just makes it so much more exciting.
Yeah. Oh, I did like a short course on Greek and Roman mythology at the start of lockdown, because I was like, right, now is my chance. And I actually got to look through like Ovid and like all the theories behind it, and just, I know, it just opened my eyes really to just new ways of visualizing these gods and goddesses and just amazing people.
Yeah. Did you learn anything particularly interesting about Ovid? I haven't ever taken a class on him, and I love him, so I should learn more about him as a person, but instead I just read Metamorphoses over and over.
Yeah. So I learned that he prefers to speak about bodies and like functions and like more of nature. So you can see that he often like, there's transitions between human and animals and all of that, and there's more blood and guts rather than just skimming over it and just being like, oh, you know, this happened. Like, he really goes in depth with it.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like, the nasty, gory stuff, because that's so primitive. And it just, I like seeing the inner depths of people. So, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's what I love about him. And similar with Euripides, is neither of them strayed away from like it just being like visceral and violent. Yeah, it's such a good, they're just so entertaining in that way, both of them.
Yes, definitely. And it's just the gossip. I was going about the goss. I love the goss.
Ovid was very good for that, for sure. And Euripides, both of them. Yeah.
But the way that they show like female characters as well, they really do give them more of a voice. And I just love it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Obviously they're my favorite. I talk about it a lot, but specifically because, they're so visceral. And then the way they clearly understood women as people, as in a way that most other ancient Greek men did not.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember his name though. The poet who was a shepherd, Hesiod. Oh, I bought a book at the start of lockdown as well, and it was just a little part of like how, what he thought of women, and I was just like, oh my god, this is where it came from.
Absolutely. You see it as a disaster when it comes to women.
He's horrible.
Yeah.
So horrible. The way that he spoke about Pandora, you know.
Oh god.
Disgusting. But it kind of goes to show that Ovid was able to see women in a different light, even though he did portray them as being like still quite nasty beings. But you know what? Women can be nasty sometimes, just like Medea, like with the Euripides. Like, it's really important to show like all sides of a woman, like complex characters, rather than just being the housewife or, you know, like Aphrodite, goddess of love and femininity. You know, there's another side to her as well.
Absolutely. And it just is about the way that some of them did it, in a way that Medea is horrifying, but also really sympathetic at the same time, in a really complex way that shows that she's a complex, real human versus, yeah, just sort of a stock photo of a woman.
Yeah, 100%. And I really liked how when I was doing my week on Dionysus, and I learned that during Dionysia, so when they would see the play at the end of the 3 days, they would show those plays to spark conversation amongst the crowd. And there was one part of it where they were singing the song of the goat, or the cries of the goat. So they would slaughter a goat at the play, and then they would air out their grievances, so everybody would speak, and women were allowed to watch the plays as well. So it's like the men actually got to see a different side of the women and actually listen to their problems and their issues and their emotions. And I just think that was a good time in Dionysia to spark, you know, arguments, but, you know, so everybody could have a fair share and, yeah, a fair say.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I didn't know that, actually. That's really, really interesting. I wanted to look up more on that festival in general, just because it's so interesting.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And like one part, they were talking about your heartbeat. So as you're watching the play, your heartbeat syncs with everyone else in the arena. So that's how everybody would be feeling the same emotions of like guilt and pity throughout the whole play. So if you're watching Medea, everybody's feeling the same emotions, and you know, everybody's got an understanding of it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I find myself at a loss of adjectives when when I hear stuff like that, and I just repeat the word interesting constantly.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, obviously I love this stuff, but oh my god, learning more of it. Yeah.
I got that from Ancient History Fangirl.
Oh god, how do I not know it? I'm friends with them. I can get on that.
They're amazing.
Oh, I know. I love them so much.
They're fab.
What are your thoughts on Tiresias, if you have any, in terms of trans characters specifically, I guess?
So, with Tiresias, Tiresias was transformed into a woman as a punishment, was it?
Yes, and then transformed back.
And then transformed back, and then shamed because he let slip that women have better orgasms.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. Well, thanks for letting that out. I mean, someone had to. I mean, it's only a matter of time, but I wish that he would have stayed as a woman, to be honest, and got to experience a bit more rather than just saying, you know, what happens when we have sex? Why didn't he experience more of being a woman? There's more to us than just that.
Absolutely, God. Well, and it's, you know, he wasn't able to reveal that while he was a woman. He had to become a man again in order to reveal that truth. Yeah. That one's interesting, and it's so very brief. Like, I don't even know if I've fully told the story yet, because it's so short that it just doesn't even come up with a full episode.
Yeah, those are the only facts I've researched into, because I just want to know more. But I'm so fascinated because that's the thing with myths. Like, you could just take something and run with it, because there's so many versions of it already that you could create your own episode and just go into the life of Tiresias as a woman. And you could do it through a female voice then. I think it's a good idea. You can create a story. But yeah, I do. I think it's an important part of, it's an important thing to have a male transitioning into a woman. But I feel like there's not enough context of himself as a woman to, for it to be really not important, but obviously it's still important, but just more effective.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it's interesting because it's such a minor part of his life, whereas he was known for being such an important prophet in so many stories.
So intelligent.
And, yeah. And he's, you know, he's vital in so many different really important stories like Oedipus and I'm going to forget other ones, but lots.
Yeah. Is he in Odysseus as well?
Odysseus goes to see him in the underworld. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, so it's like that also never really seems to come up. It's sort of an afterthought, like, oh, yeah, there was that time that he was transformed into a woman and then he was transformed back. One thing I do always enjoy, though, is that I forget if which direction the transformation happened because of this, but one of his transformations happened because he saw two snakes having sex.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so it was like either he saw two snakes having sex, so he was transformed into a woman, or he saw them and he was transformed back into a man. But either way, it was because he witnessed snakes fucking.
I mean, well, we better be careful next time we go to the zoo. That's all
I'm
saying. Definitely.
Absolutely.
I mean, if I could experience just being a man for a day and then, yeah, I would do it. Try it.
Yeah.
I think we all should.
Well, absolutely. I think you get a whole different, you know, understanding of the world.
Yeah, definitely.
I think men should experience being women for a day even more so. But
yeah, I think, yeah. But I don't think they'd be able to cope that well, really. I think we'd see right through them.
Yeah, they're not prepared for it.
There is, like, I like the story of Callisto and Diana.
Oh, yes.
So when Zeus appeared as Artemis and seduced Callisto as Artemis, because Callisto was such, you know, she looked up to Artemis and she was in love with her. She absolutely adored her and she looked up to her like a high priestess. And just to see that love, like, that's why I interpreted them as an actual couple, because I wanted to see that happen. I didn't actually want Zeus to come into it at all. And I never really draw Zeus because I feel like there's been enough of him. We've had enough. Give everyone else a chance. But yeah, I really like them as a couple and I just want to see them thriving. I just want to create a new myth where they are like the lesbian power couple.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I think that they have a really lovely story that's then ruined by everything else.
Yeah, I know. It's so
sad.
Zeus, there's so many
everything.
He ruins everything. There's so many beautiful paintings of them two together that you just kind of think, oh, they probably did. It probably did happen at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Artemis never punished her and everyone lived happily ever after. And
yeah. She was never turned into a bear. That didn't happen.
Maybe after her death so that the, you know, constellation can still exist. But it was after a natural death, after a good long time.
Good long life.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, I don't know. Who's your favorite? Who would you say is your favorite character?
I mean, I think I, along with so many other people, was so affected by the Song of Achilles.
Yeah.
That I developed a love for Patroclus that I didn't have before.
Yes, he's everyone's favorite, like, himbo. That's my new favorite one at the moment.
He's just, I mean, and it's that book, right? It's so, it's that book more than it is anything that's said in the Iliad. But it just depicts him as the most wonderful man. And you just want everything good to happen to him and nothing horrible ever to happen to him. And you want Achilles to be nicer and a better boyfriend.
I know. They could definitely make a movie. I don't know why they haven't done that
yet. Oh my God.
Yet.
No, and instead Troy has Achilles and Patroclus as cousins, which makes me angrier than I could ever say.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cousins. Oh, why? What
it's
is
gross.
So bad? It's just,
yeah, it makes them cousins and Patroclus is like really young. It's like his like baby cousin who Achilles is like watching over in that movie. It's so gross.
No, I don't like that. We don't like that. No.
No. And even even in the mythology, even if you ignore their relationship as so many translators and mythologers do, like, they're still not cousins.
Yeah. No, don't do it. Don't make it weird.
Exactly. They're not related, no matter what.
Exactly. Because people are going to be watching that after reading the book and they're like, what? Like, this is weird. This is going down a different route. This is not what we wanted.
The myth of Hyacinthus and Apollo when he turned him into a hyacinth.
Gosh. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, which is, God, so tragic. I love that one, but it's so sad.
I love it too. That was one of the first ones that I really like fell in love with, and I love Hyacinthus. Like, he's one of my favorites because he's everyone's favorite. Like, he is the it boy. Like, everyone wants to get with Hyacinthus. And yeah, just learning about those flowers and like knowing where they come from. And my grandmother actually, she's a flower expert, and she always used to sprout these stories of like where they come from, where the names come from. So it's quite nice to share that knowledge with her, to be like, oh, this came from ancient Greece sort of thing. But yeah.
That's lovely. Yeah, to have that connection. Yeah, that story, I love it. I mean, I also think it's one of, I mean, there are definitely a few, but it's one of the ones where no matter who is telling the story and how homophobic they are, they can't get away from the fact that they had like a real and true romance, and they were simply in love, and there's nothing else you can take from it. There's no way to like, you know, walk your way around it or anything. It's like, no, Apollo and Hyacinthus were in love.
Yeah. And there's real, you know, there's real emotion in it as well. There's real jealousy between men, you know. And that's really interesting because you'd never really talk about men's emotions in that kind of way towards sexuality and sex.
Yeah, that's so true. So
amongst other men anyway, like within Greek mythology. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it is, I think it's rare in general. So to have that, where it's, they have a very, very human relationship with its jealousies and its complexities, and I mean, less so with the horrifying death, but...
Yeah. I mean, Apollo is one of the gods that I literally just think, why? Why are you doing this? Because you have so much potential of being like Dionysus. But to be honest, we need those guys, really, don't we? And he's proud to be bi, and I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just, you know, loves who he loves at any given time.
And he's kind of like Zeus, where he'll just have sex with anyone. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
No. And, you know, Apollo's a little less horrific. So that's something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's a bit nicer.
Yeah.
I've got like Hestia and Athena as well. Now, I think Athena, I read that she used to have like consorts, female and male consorts. And I think Athena could possibly have had more of a sexuality than we know. What do you think?
Interesting. I haven't done that much digging on her for that reason, but that would be really interesting too. Because I'd love to know more about that. I mean, it's so hard with those ones, similar to Artemis, to know, you know, what was really believed back then if you were to talk to everybody.
I know it's difficult with that that threesome of women, Artemis, Athena and Hestia, the virgins. But yeah, that's why I kind of did my celibates poster, to kind of give explanation towards why they might be celibate, because celibacy is a choice for yourself, not for anybody else. To, you know, nobody can tell you to be celibate or like force you into doing that. So I kind of wanted to give them a voice and a reason to tell people why they are. So like Hestia, I find she's quite an interesting character, whereas she's asexual. She's a virgin. She doesn't have sex with anybody in the myths, but she expresses maternal instincts by helping people on Earth. Like, she's kind of like this mother who's not a mother at the same time.
Yeah, that's very true. She is such a mother goddess without that literal understanding of it. I think it's important to sort of address all the different ways we could understand those characters, because we don't really know, you know, and not that there is necessarily a truth, because they're fiction.
Yeah.
And based around, you know, so much history and so many things changed over so many years. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel bad calling them fiction because I desperately want them not to be, but.
Yeah, I know. Well, I honestly just think of them as being real beings, because it just makes living life so much nicer. Like, you just kind of have an explanation for everything.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I do, I kind of feel that way until I'm trying to, like, I guess sort of understand it in a more finite way, because yeah. I feel like I have to wrap my head around how one of them would be, or the different versions over time. I have to do so much of that that I think I end up having to fall onto them being fictional. But in my heart of hearts, they are not. And in the way that I, you know, think of these stories, they are definitely not, because, you know, I think about them and the way their personalities would be and the way their interactions would be, and I could think about them forever. Clearly,
I know. Yeah. I'm researching Welsh gods and goddesses at the moment, so I'm looking into those deities, and I've got this really amazing book. Oh, I can't find it somewhere, but it gives you like a brief of how to set up a shrine for them. So when you're going through each god and goddess, they tell you like what items to leave out and like what pictures to hang up to like summon them. And I just can't wait to start like a little shrine, because I've never ever been like that religious or anything, but just to have that in my room and just to kind of think like those are gods and goddesses that were on this land, because I'm quite patriotic and I just love being Welsh. So just to have that would be so nice. And I think that Welsh mythology is it's not really taught in schools. You kind of learn it in primary schools, so when you're from the age of like 5 to 10 sometimes, and then sometimes it'll come up in Welsh class. But I think looking through those would be really interesting and kind of giving them more of a personality, because there are some really fierce women in Welsh mythology.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That must be so nice to have that sort of history and mythology to take on from your own country.
It's amazing. It's pretty nuts, to be honest, but it is quite similar to Greek mythology. There are similar topics, which goes to show that mythology, we all have this shared sense of mythology in these certain beings.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all universal.
What I wanted to say was, I want to make Medusa the face of change now. She's gonna be the icon. She is. I did an illustration last week, a couple of weeks ago, of her taking a snooze during lockdown, and then one of her snakes telling her to get the fuck up, because it's time. Like, I feel like we should take her and take her from that idea of her being a victim, and now really showing her as kind of the force that's battling against this patriarchy.
Well, she's the protectress, so it suits. I love it.
Definitely.
I mean, what a queen. Your illustration of her with the Me Too badge is like one of the highlights of my living room.
Oh, thank you. She's a bad bitch. She's in many people's living rooms now. I always like to put on the card, like, I hope she brings you bad bitch energy, because that is it.
That is her, and I love it. I love the way she's kind of constantly being reimagined lately. She seems to have a resurgence every couple of weeks, even. It's great.
I know, I love it. But that's the main thing of like taking these female characters. Like, I mean, she is a Gorgon, so she is technically kind of like creature, monster.
Yeah, but in some indications it's odd with her. You never know.
But that is like how men consider women sometimes. They're these creatures that they can't understand, so to have her as like the face of change would be amazing.
Thank you so much for coming on and doing this. That was so much fun, and I've always wanted to kind of expand upon the way I tell these stories to people who know more than me or have just different insights into these things. So I'm so glad I got to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Liv. Honestly, it's been such a pleasure. I've had so much fun.
nerds, thank you all so much for listening. I hope you've all enjoyed this episode. I know it was a little non-standard, but it's important, and I wanted to make sure that I always at least devote a few episodes a year to stories like these, emphasizing the understanding the Greeks had for people who weren't straight and cisgendered. But like I said, I'm running low. Next week, I think we'll head back into the Aeneid, or maybe just a one-off story to get us back into the full-blown storytelling vibe, since I've had a couple of funny episodes lately. We'll just see. Soon, I'll be able to devote more time to the podcast, and oh my god, I couldn't be more excited. But more on that later. For now, please consider pre-ordering my book of mythology, because fuck, I wrote a book of mythology. Head over to mythsdaby.com/book for links to pre-order, or just search my name, Liv Albert, on the website of your local independent bookstore. Support indie bookstores! Thank you all for listening. You are all the best and have truly changed my life. I am Liv, and I love this shit.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Dad deserves something really nice for Father's Day, but let's face it, we usually don't do it. Big gifts are for Mother's Day. Picking something up on the way is for Father's Day. Well, let's make Father's Day something this year with the Bartesian Cocktail Maker. It whips up over 60 premium cocktails on demand, each ready at the push of a button. And right now, you get $50 off the Bartesian Cocktail Maker when you buy one pack of Dad's favorite cocktail capsules. Dad will publicly love that you saved $50 on the countertop machine that crafts premium cocktails on demand. And he'll secretly love that you splurged on him for Father's Day with the gift of a Bartesian. Because the only thing that lets Dad know he's the world's number one dad better than a world's number one dad coffee mug is an artisan cocktail in his hand. Make Dad's Father's Day and Father's Day cocktails with all natural juices and bitters without making any mess at all. Visit bartesian.com/father to get $50 off the best premium cocktail maker for Dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
There's nothing better than spoiling the dads, especially with $1,000. So what better way to spoil that father figure in your life than with a brand new wardrobe? That's why I am so excited about this new partnership. JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. It's an exclusive limited-time men's collection with a laid-back, down-home vibe. Walker's collection consists of casually cool styles designed with outdoor-inspired details guys love and versatile colors that work year-round. This Father's Day, iHeartRadio and JCPenney want to celebrate the father figure in your life by giving a $1,000 Visa gift card to put towards their favorite activity like a round of golf, concert tickets, fishing trip, etc., and a $500 JCPenney gift card to snag some of the exclusive pieces from the Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection. Enter now to make this the best Father's Day ever for the father figure in your life at iHeartRadio.com/Father's Day sweepstakes. JCPenney, make it count.